You are Locked On Jets, your daily New York Jets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
You are Locked On Jets. It is Thursday, December 13th, 2018. I'm your host, John B. from GangreneNation.com. Subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or Spotify, and if you enjoy it, leave it a good review in iTunes. Well, this week we're finally back to a regular schedule, and the first time in a while. And we're going to do our Thursday mailbag show. These are questions from the comment section of GangreneNation.com and also an email or two that was sent to me. Lots of great questions this week. We'll get to as many as we can. Probably won't be able to get to all of them. If we do miss your question and you really want it answered, please feel free to send it again next week. Really do appreciate it. We could not do this mailbag show without you, all of your great questions. So we'll start with an email from a listener named Luke, who actually sent this a couple days ago when some big news came out of Minnesota. I was pretty shocked to hear of the firing of offensive coordinator John DeFilippo. Granted, I was definitely not in tune with the dynamics of what was going on with that coaching staff through the year. The biggest concern was not having enough success running the ball or calling enough run plays. I find a hard time justifying that when you have Diggs, Thielen, and a capable tight end in Rudolph. With that said, I'd like to know your thoughts on the firing, whether you like the idea of coaching the Jets, or who you could possibly see being competitions for his services. If the Johnson brothers have decided to keep McCagnan, do you think it would be wise to fire Bowles now to explore this possibility? I only know so much about DeFilippo, but my gut reaction would be to strongly pursue him as the head coach. Okay, so a lot to chew on there, and I'll say this. I don't watch the Vikings every single week, but I've caught a decent chunk of their games this year. I am inclined to feel like the issues were not so much the offensive coordinator on that team. I think that there were issues on the offensive line. I think they, if you go back a few months, you go back like 2 months, and it just shows you how quickly things changed in the NFL. We had Chris Gates on, who of course writes about the Vikings for Daily Norseman, right before the Jets game, and he was talking to DeFilippo up. He was talking about what a good coach he is, how they thought they were definitely going to, he thought the Vikings were definitely going to lose DeFilippo to some team that was going to hire him as a head coach. And now here we are in December, and he's fired. He's out as offensive coordinator. They lost him as offensive coordinator, but not because he got a head coaching job, because they fired him. If you followed happening with the Vikings, you kind of get the feeling there was a disconnect between DeFilippo and the head coach, Mike Zimmer. He seemed like that relationship was kind of deteriorating. There were kind of some tea leaves you could read through the press, some comments that were made, so it may have been a philosophical thing. But I go back to this, and I've mentioned this a couple times over the last couple weeks, is I feel like the lesson of Sean McVay has kind of been overlearned. I feel like people in the NFL, they watch what happened with the Rams when McVay comes in and everything changes because of the coaching staff, and they get the mistaken impression that coaching is now the problem of and the solution to all problems in the NFL, when players have a lot to do with it. I think the Vikings have some personnel issues. And I'd say this, not just DeFilippo. You look at the coaches who've been fired this year, both head coaches and assistant coaches. I mean, there are some guys who are not awful coaches. They're not all Hugh Jackson. They're not all terrible coaches who need to be fired. It's just their teams were underperforming. And look, if you're the Minnesota Vikings, what's the easiest thing to change? If they can't change the quarterback, they gave the quarterback a ton of money. They're stuck with that quarterback for a couple more years. It's tough to change the head coach in season. You can't change the general manager. If you're looking to just shake something up, you're going to change the coordinator. It's easy to fire your offensive coordinator. Now, as far as the Jets go, I think there's no chance DeFilippo gets hired by the Jets. And again, that just shows you how quickly things change in the NFL. Because a couple weeks ago, I probably would have guessed, if you asked me to guess one name who's probably going to be the Jets head coach next year, I probably would have gone DeFilippo. Now, right or wrong, I think perception matters, and I don't think the Jets are going to hire a guy who was just fired as an offensive coordinator. And I'm not sure he's the right guy. I'm not sure he would be the wrong guy. But I just don't see it happening with the Jets. I think he could be in the mix for an assistant coaching job, maybe a coordinator job, maybe a quarterback's coach job. And he'd be a qualified candidate. I don't think he's a bad coach. I just think it was a situation where it was easier to get rid of the coordinator than it was anybody else. And I think, there seemed like there were some philosophical issues between he and the head coach. So, I don't think he'll be it depends on who they hire as head coach. I don't think it would be totally crazy to think he might be a candidate or be a good candidate to be on the coaching staff. But I just don't see the Jets. I think perception matters too much for the Jets to hire a guy to be their head coach who was just fired as offensive coordinator, right or wrong. Next question. Thoughts on rumors of Le'Veon Bell joining this team in free agency? Would you like to see him as a Jet or not? And, you know, I'll tell you, I don't have all the answers on this. And I go back and forth on this one, and I'm going to think about this one over the next few months because I see reasons to want him. I see reasons to not want him. You know, he plays a position that's not that hard to find top talent at. And, you know, you look at through the league, how many guys are day two picks who are not just good backs, but really top of the league backs. So that's one. Two is you look at the salaries. The league just doesn't value the position that much. Three, you look at, and this is something nobody really acknowledges, the Steelers have replaced him with, again, a guy who was not drafted that early. He's totally replaced Bell's production. So those are, you know, those are some things to consider. On the other hand, and there is another side of the coin, the Jets are badly in need of offensive talent. They have to spend the money somewhere. And I think for a team like the Jets, a guy like Bell might be more valuable for than he would be for the Steelers because he'd be so much more than a back. He'd be a go-to guy. He'd be kind of the centerpiece of the offense. So a guy like Bell for the Jets may be more valuable than he would be to another team. So I could go back and forth. I have concerns about how many games he's missed in his career. I have concerns about durability. I have concerns about how many touches he's taken. When will he decline? So, you know, I could go either way on it right now, to be honest with you. I'm not entirely sure where I fall on it. I see reasons to want him. I see reasons to not want him. And it's just something I'm going to think through over the next few months. And, you know, if you've got your own thoughts, please let me know, because I'd love to hear them either way. Sometimes I decide just based on what you guys, the arguments get laid out to me by other people. So I'm interested to hear your thoughts on that. Next question: How big of a bullet did the Jets dodge by not paying Kirk Cousins $90 million over 3 years? I think a pretty big one. I go back to this and. When did this guy become Peyton Manning? I said this a lot last spring. I mean, I just don't know when this guy became such a big-time quarterback. I don't understand why people... When did he ever lift a team? When did they ever, you know, carry a team anywhere? I just don't see it. I never saw it in the guy. I thought there were flaws with him. You see it. I mean, he's not great under pressure. He makes a lot of mistakes under pressure. Sometimes his mechanics fall apart. He's just not really a guy I've ever seen like really lift a team to new heights. And I mean, I go back, and it's dangerous to just judge a guy on one game, but that Giants game in 2016 always bothered me when the Giants had nothing to play for. Washington had everything to play for. They needed to win for a playoff spot. They were at home, and Cousins did nothing. I mean, and I've just never seen it with the guy. So, I mean, look, Sam has a long way to go. You can't declare Sam a success yet, but that said, I did not want to pay Kirk Cousins that contract, and you look at what he's doing in Minnesota, and again, I put more of this on Cousins. The reason they got rid of DeFilippo is, again, it's easier to get rid of the coordinator than it is the quarterback you just paid, you just guaranteed a three-year deal to. But, I mean, I've never thought that Kirk Cousins is some sort of franchise quarterback who's going to lift a team to glory. I just have never seen it. So I think the Jets, you know, sometimes you need to be lucky. Sometimes the best move is the move you don't end up making, and sometimes you want to make it. Sometimes you get lucky that something you want did not pan out, and that may end up being the case with the Jets. We'll see how Sam turns out, but I can't say I regret passing on Kirk Cousins. I beg your pardon, missing out on Kirk Cousins. We're back here doing our Mailbag Thursday show here on the Locked On Jets podcast. Our next question is about Chris Herndon. How much promise do you see in Herndon? Are you as high on him as you were Amaro during his rookie season? Well, the answer is no, but part of that is I think I'm a little smarter than I was with Amaro, where I probably just hyped Amaro up way too soon, over way too little. So part of it's I'm more cautious now about how I evaluate the tight end position because I ended up with a lot of egg on my face when I talked up Jason. I mean, I was talking Jason Amaro like he was going to be the next Gronk. So I'm not going to go that crazy over what Herndon's doing just because I've learned how silly you can make yourself look. But look, I think you have to be encouraged by what you're seeing. I think you have to be encouraged by the connection he has with Sam. I think you have to be encouraged by the fact he keeps getting better. He looks very athletic. And here's the other thing is, what I like about Herndon is there's a plausible argument for why he may have been a steal. You know, there's an argument to be made that he really wasn't a fourth round talent. And one of the things I like in the draft is when you can find guys who may be a little undervalued for reasons that don't have to do with their talent. And the thing about Herndon is he wasn't that productive in college. His numbers weren't that big. But there's a reason that might transcend his talent. Is first of all, he was playing behind David Njoku, who was another very talented guy, a very high draft pick. So maybe it's just not a case where his numbers were low because he lacked talent. Maybe it was just he was behind a really talented guy and didn't get his opportunities. So that's, he also suffered an injury, which sometimes when you go into the draft, that deflates your stock a little bit. So I think going into the draft, it's quite plausible. You could argue that just based on pure talent, he's better than the fourth round pick. And those are the types of picks I like, where there's a lot of upside there. There's a lot of untapped upside. So we'll see what happens. I'm not going to crown him anything yet until we see more production, because this is the big offseason. And for a lot of players, the offseason between year one and year two is where you make your biggest improvement as a player. And I'll tell you what I said about Jamal Adams last year. Different positions, different expectations, obviously much different sixth overall pick versus a fourth rounder. What you're getting from Herndon is good for a rookie, but it's not that great for a player in general. He has to take the step next year. He has to take the next step. But I think you, by any measure, you have to be very pleased by what you've seen from Chris Herndon this year. And you have to be optimistic, because he's flashing skills. He's shown production. And he just seems to be getting better as the season goes along. So, no, I'm not going to proclaim him the next, all-pro tight end the way I did with Amaro, because I saw how stupid it is to do that with Amaro. But I do like what I see out of Herndon. I think you have to be very optimistic about how things are going. Next question. Why is the Jets' run defense terrible with Leonard Williams, McClendon, Pinnell, Henry Anderson, Jamal Adams, Jordan Jenkins, and Avery Williamson? How can a team with that many good run defenders allow the 27th most rushing yards per game? Well, I think at the risk of giving you the simple answer, it's just you have some guys who are inconsistent, some guys who are underperforming, and I look a lot at Leonard Williams this year, who, last year he wasn't putting up monster numbers, but I felt like he was winning his assignments a lot, where this year there have been too many instances. And I will say this, I think things have looked better the last couple weeks, so maybe there's a little positivity to be gained, but there's been too many instances. He's looked like an ordinary lineman this year. It's one thing to, not put up big stats. Sometimes you do have production that's not necessarily something that's obvious. Sometimes you're making things easier because you're winning at your assignments. You're drawing double teams. I mean, he just hasn't done enough of that this year. So I just think you have some underperformers out there. Next question. Trumaine Johnson with two interceptions last game. What would he have to do for the rest of the season to make you feel better about next year? I mean, there's a lot. It's tough. I mean, he'd have to play well against this is a tough slate of games you got, where you have Watson, Rodgers, and Brady to finish the season. And look, he did have two interceptions, but this uptick in recent play has also come against teams without great receivers. I there's not a lot that he can do that will not make me nervous about him heading into next season just because of his age. I mean, he's at an age where you look at it on paper, he's not that young. It's not that young for a corner. At another position, you might not say that Johnson's that old, but a corner, it can go very quickly. And the other thing nobody talks about with Johnson is he really did not have that good of a year last year. I mean, his numbers were pretty poor last year with the Rams. So is it a case where people say, well, it's just one bad year? Well, it's not really one bad year, because he was not that great a year ago either. He was not that great in 2017 either. So is it a case, is he already in decline? I'm nervous about this. A strong finish to the year where he shuts down DeAndre Hopkins, where it's a good game against, Green Bay and Rodgers, and against Brady. At least there's a plausible argument you could make at that point that, all right, maybe he's turning the corner. Maybe, he got past his early struggles with the Jets, but I think he's a huge question mark. No matter what happens over these last 3 weeks of the season, to me, he's a huge question mark heading into next year. And if he has one, if he goes back to bad games against, improved passing attacks, then, he does a lot of the good he did in the Buffalo game. And honestly, how much difference does it make that he had a couple picks against Buffalo after the year he's had? So, I mean, I think he's a big question. And he's going to be on the team next year because the Jets don't have because of the way they did this contract. He's going to be on this team next year. He's probably going to be on the team the year after, too. And that's, again, just because of the contract situation. But I think you have to be very concerned about that deal right now. Next question. Has Nathan Shepard exceeded the humongous expectations you always place on mid-round rookies? And I guess that's a joke, because I always say, you know, keep your expectations very low. I got to be honest with you. I think it's been kind of a disappointing year for Shepard, especially given the hype he had in training camp and preseason. And not just hype. I shouldn't say hype, because he was playing well in the training camp practices I watched, and he was playing well in the preseason. It just has not translated to regular season games. He hasn't done anything, which is not the end of the world again. But you know, you'd like to see a guy like Herndon, who, you know, Herndon's not posting monster numbers, but you get a feeling like he shows he belongs, and every now and then he does something really special. I have not seen a lot special from Shepard this year, and that's okay for a third rounder. The one thing that concerns me a little bit is his age, because he's kind of old for a rookie. So you'd like to see a guy who's more mature, more, you know, older. You'd like to see him produce a little bit more, but at the same time, he's also coming from a small school, which is a big transition. Think about a guy like Shepard, and this is what I say about anybody who comes from a small school. He used to be able to dominate just because he was the biggest, strongest, you know, most athletic guy. In the NFL, everybody's big, strong, and athletic. You have to win with technique. So he may have been able to get away with it without strong technique in college. A lot of people thought his technique was good in college, so you take that for what it's worth, but it is a transition to the NFL from a small school. So, I mean, I think that there's some reasons to hope, and there are some reasons to be a little worried, a little perturbed about what's happened this year when it comes to Shepard. Our next question deals with rookie quarterbacks. Would you trade Darnold for Mayfield? And this is, look, I'm not, this is not an anti-Baker comment. I like, you know, that guy's really grown on me. You gotta like that guy. He's just something enjoyable about him. But look, I'm not going to trade Darnold for him right now. Look, Mayfield's having a really nice rookie year, and I think that, you know, Cleveland has to be very excited about what its future likes look what its future looks like with him. But the thing is, you can't do this. You can't take the temperature this soon. And let me tell you why. Let's look back 2 years to the 2016 quarterback class, that draft class in 2016. Their rookie years, who was the best of the bunch? Who was everybody saying was the best quarterback of that class? It was probably Dak Prescott, because the Cowboys were having a great year with them. Then you go to last year, year two. Who was the best guy? Carson Wentz was the MVP candidate. Prescott kind of had a pedestrian year. People started saying, well, it's because he had Zeke Elliott, because he had that offensive line in Dallas. So Wentz has the MVP season. Then you move to this year. Now Jared Goff's the best. You know, Jared Goff, who, you know, Troy Aikman famously said couldn't throw a spiral. So this is a long-term type deal. And, you know, it could, the 2016 class, it could, you could see some ebbs and flows. You know, you could see things change with that class again next year. And that's just the way it is. You know, you can't take it. It's going to be a long time before we know who the best quarterback of this 2018 class is. But I will say this, is I'm a big Sam fan, as you probably know, and I like where he's heading. So at this point, I'd say no. Look, we'll talk about it in 5 to 10 years, and we'll figure out who's the best. And, you know, if all goes well, neither team would make that trade. I think both teams are, you know, I think there's a very good chance both teams are going to be very happy with the quarterback they ended up with. Next question, Buffalo game. Yes, it was great to see Sam have some success in the second half, but wouldn't it have been better if Buffalo won on that last drive and put the Jets back into the number one position in the draft order? Paraphrasing Herm voice, you play to develop Sam and get the number one pick. Hopefully that was a good imitation, because I was asked to do it in the Herm voice. I understand the argument. I think that honestly, a few picks at the top of the draft, the difference is not as big as people make it out to be. I mean, there are some years where it actually makes a difference, but I think in a normal year, the difference between, you know, three slots at the top of the draft is nowhere near as big as people make it out to be, especially when your team is not looking for a quarterback, as the Jets are not right now. So I understand the perspective, but, you know, it's a milestone victory for Sam. At the end of the day, I think the difference between winning that game and losing that game is probably overblown. You can argue that, well, Sam getting his first comeback, his first game-winning drive would have happened at some point. And I get that, but at the same time, I don't know that there's really going to end up being a huge, huge difference between, you know, owning, you know, whatever pick. The Jets are going to be picking in the top very high in the first round. So I don't think, you know, there are some specific instances where it makes a difference. But on the whole, you know, in a typical year, I just don't think that there's that big of a difference between picking, you know, a few slots, three, four slots lower when you're in the top five. Our last question today deals with past Jets head coaches. Since Woody Johnson bought the Jets, almost all of his hires have either worked for the Jets in the past or had immediate family members work for the Jets. Herm had no Jets ties, but Mangini was previously on the Jets staff. Rex Ryan's father was on the staff, and Bowles was previously on the Jets coaching staff. Would it be best for the next head coach that they didn't previously work for the Jets, or does it not matter? Well, I think it probably doesn't matter a lot. I think to the extent it matters, it's probably a positive just because you have a sense of what the media, you probably have a little sense of what the media is like, you know, dealing with the pressure of being a coach in New York. You can at least observe what the guy you were, you know, if you were an assistant, you can at least observe what it was like working for the head coach, you know, what he had to go through in terms of pressure in the press and things like that. I don't think it's a big deal, though. I don't think it's hurt any of these guys. I don't think that's the reason, you know, these other coaches have been unsuccessful, though. So I don't think it should be a negative. I don't think it would be the type of thing that would drive my decision. I would not be looking for somebody. I would not rule out any candidate who has never worked for the Jets, but I think it would probably would be a slight positive, a minor plus. So I don't think it matters a ton. That's all for today's show. Thank you for listening. This has been the Locked On Jets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. If you enjoy the show, subscribe, iTunes or Spotify, and leave it a good review in iTunes. Have a great Thursday. We will be back tomorrow to preview Saturday's game between the Jets and the Texans.